As early as next Tuesday, the Wisconsin State Senate might debate a bill that would ban or prohibit abortions after 20 weeks. Wisconsin I earlier interviewed the sponsors of that bill, Senate President Mary Lozick, State Representative Jesse Creamer. Now we're talking to two physicians who oppose the bill. So I want to thank Dr. Kathy Hartke, Chair of the Wisconsin Section of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and Dr. Kathy King, Medical Director of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and an Assistant Professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for inviting us.
The premise of the bill, as you heard yesterday in that emotional more than 5-hour hearing, which Wisconsin I carried, just the plug there, is that this is the point that the fetus can feel pain. Can we start, since that's the premise of the bill and what the sponsors say, can we talk about that? The studies show what?
The studies show that that is not true, and that until about the third trimester of pregnancy, that the fetus cannot feel pain. We submitted, along with the state organizations for family practice, pediatrics, obstetricians, and the Wisconsin Medical Society, representing 10,000 plus physicians, a statement that supports our position on that.
Then I don't understand why the sponsors say the studies prove conclusively the obvious that it can feel pain. Can you help me understand that, Dr. King?
I believe their focus on fetal pain is really more of a political construct than a scientific construct. Obviously, they use language that evokes strong emotions and gut reactions from lay public and people who don't understand the science, embryology, etc. But if you look at the wide body of research in this area, it is clear that the conclusion is that it does not appear that the fetus is capable neurologically, cognitively, of perceiving pain until most likely the third trimester, around 28 weeks, which is far from the 20-week cutoff that they are defining in this bill.
How would this bill differ from current law? Could you update us on current law? What does current law say, Dr. Hartke?
At this point, until 24 weeks, we are allowed to do terminations for all these indications that we're talking about medically, but in general, by either a medical induction or by a dilatation and evacuation procedure. What I heard yesterday was their great concern about the D&E procedure. There are rare cases that, in this number that we are talking about, past 22 weeks of gestation, where D&E is necessary for the life of the mother or for some fetal condition. And we're talking primarily about medical induction, where basically the woman is going into labor and delivering her fetus.
This bill would codify 20 weeks. How easy is that for professionals such as yourself to measure?
The wording in this bill is quite confusing if you're a medical practitioner. They use dating based on post-fertilization. That is not how a physician dates a pregnancy. We date by last menstrual period, and that's widely accepted. So to me, the language of using post-fertilization, one has to conjecture, might be to cause some confusion amongst both lay public as well as medical practitioners, because there's no other reason to use post-fertilization dating. So when they say 20 weeks post-fertilization, we translate that into 22 weeks by the way we will date a pregnancy.
Well, how could this actually potentially play out if a prosecutor said that this abortion was performed after 20 weeks? I mean, who would decide? Medical evidence? A jury? This is such a complicated issue. How do you foresee it playing out? This debate over whether this procedure was performed after 20 weeks?
I don't know how they would determine that, but I have great concern that we would be at risk with felony, with jail time for trying to save the life of a mother or to give a family some compassionate care. I mean, this is just, I don't think we've ever seen a situation like this in the state where the doctors are being threatened and the doctor-patient relationship is being ignored.
Getting ready for the show where I interviewed Representative Creamer and Senator Lozick, I read the 2013 state summary and the number of abortions. I was surprised only about 1% or 89 of the abortions performed in Wisconsin in 2013, the latest data available, were performed after 20 weeks. Does that accurately summarize that, Dr. King?
It does accurately summarize. But again, when you look at that data that is reported from the Department of Health, those are terminations that were done after 20 weeks by last menstrual period dating.
Okay.
So we're actually talking about even a smaller number of terminations that were done in that 22 to 24 week period.
And almost all of them are done in the hospital at a program where we have the Fetal Concerns Program at Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin, that we have a team of geneticists, of maternal-fetal medicine specialists, of ethicists, family have social workers, clergy. I mean, these are very, you know, carefully discussed, and patients have choices.
Mm-hmm. What are the most common reasons? Maybe you've answered it. Let's go back to it. The most common reasons for an abortion after the 20-week window would be what, please?
The most common reason would be generally a lethal fetal birth defect. I work in conjunction with our Fetal Concerns Program, and I'm one of the physicians that does those terminations. And we are referred women and families from all over the state of Wisconsin and even outside of the state of Wisconsin because of our excellence in this area. And these are families with generally a desired, wanted pregnancy when then something devastatingly goes wrong. And they found out, they usually don't find out definitively until often 18 or 20 weeks. And it often takes time. I mean, these are thoughtful, heart-wrenching decisions that families go through. And it's not, they don't make this decision lightly. They meet with teams of specialists to find out, is this treatable, is this not treatable, is this lethal, is it not? And there are conditions where just medicine cannot provide a treatment, and these babies are going to die no matter what is done. And many families find that it is the best option for them to end that pregnancy early. They find it more often humane to go through an early induction at 22 weeks and deliver often a baby who may die during the birth process, but peacefully and painlessly, versus carrying that pregnancy all the way to term. Terribly painful for many of these women who have to face people seeing them, oh, how's the baby, you know, explaining all those painful details when they know this baby's going to die. And then going through a labor process, and now delivering a baby that no one would dispute at term can feel pain, and now having to even develop more of an extensive palliative care or perinatal hospice program to care for that dying child. So this is a decision that really politicians should not be interfering with. This is a decision between a patient, her physician, her family, her faith, and not for politicians to interfere.
Thank you. Any additional thoughts on that subject?
Since 1983, when I was in training, I agree. We were a referral center for these types of situations. And you might have a baby that has no brain. I just had a patient about 2 years ago that very wanted pregnancy, fertility patient, older woman, first baby. The baby had no kidneys. There was no hope. We called the best center in the country. There was nothing that they could do. And we see all kinds of situations like this. But not only that, situations where the ongoing pregnancy may make the mother even sicker or put her at risk of dying. I have a former employee that has since passed away. She had a 50-50 chance of dying in her pregnancy if she continued because of a heart problem. Now, if somebody told you going to work for the next 2 months that you had a 50-50 chance of dying, I think I'd think twice about that. And she opted not to terminate her pregnancy, but she had a choice about that, and her family had a choice. And she died at a much younger age. And these women, you know, have very difficult decisions about not only the fetus and their other children who could be left motherless, but just, you know, how to cope with this whole situation.
Let me ask kind of an overview question. Why have the number of abortions in Wisconsin peaked in the 1980s, I think in 1982 or 83, and are down 70% to the 6,462 that were reported done in the state in 2013? Give us the big picture for reason for those changes, for that drop-off.
I think one of the biggest things is better contraception, better education. I believe that informing our young people about contraception and the choices that they're making has made a huge difference. Unfortunately, we had a law that reversed that for school districts and what they can teach. It's a shame because this is fact and truth, and I think we also have very good contraception now. Since the St. Louis study showing the long-acting reversible contraception, the LARC methods, mm-hmm. we're having much lower rates of pregnancy.
And I agree. I think we are seeing decreases in unintended pregnancy rates. We've seen a remarkable decrease in the teen pregnancy rate in Wisconsin, as well as all states across the United States. And there are much better contraceptive methods that are available, and more women are taking opportunity to use those most effective methods.
What's been the effect of the recent changes in state law? Are some of our elected officials, including Governor Walker, who's laying the groundwork to run for president, when he talks on the campaign trail, says, well, we defunded Planned Parenthood. But what's been the effect of some of these changes that I've been covering the Capitol for more than 20 years? Is that a big reason for the decrease?
I think that has nothing to do with the decrease.
Okay.
When he defunded Planned Parenthood, what we ended up having to close were our five clinics that were located in rural areas that provided family planning and comprehensive reproductive health care. Those clinics were working to prevent unintended pregnancies and to prevent abortions. And now you eliminate that. How does that decrease abortions? Women who find themselves in a position of wanting to terminate a pregnancy will find a way to terminate that pregnancy no matter what the governor's laws.
Thoughts on some of these changes, Doctor?
I agree with everything she said.
Okay. Am I correct? It's been a little bit since I've read the bill. The only exception is for a medical emergency in the bill that was up for a public hearing and potential Senate votes. I'm obviously a layman, but that sounds like a vague term. Can medical professionals agree on what a, quote, medical emergency is?
Mary Lasich has decided to define in the bill what a medical emergency is, and this is extremely troubling. The only exception in this bill is if a woman's life is imminently threatened and she faces death or loss of major bodily organ function within the next 24 hours. In no other area of medicine would anyone find it acceptable to allow someone's health condition to deteriorate to a point where they were imminently about to die before they were going to intervene. Julaine Appling, with president of Wisconsin Family Action, who I do not know, but I don't believe she's a medical professional, said there is no medical situation in which the life of the mother is dependent upon terminating the fetus. As a medical professional, I would beg to disagree. I can give her multiple examples of when I was called by a cardiologist, someone in the ICU, to intervene, unfortunately, in someone who was critically ill, whose nothing else was helping her medical situation, and unfortunately, the only thing that would improve her medical situation was doing an abortion. And that procedure did save those women's lives.
This came up yesterday in the hearing, and I was questioned by one of the legislators about that very thing. I said, we don't have a crystal ball. We cannot predict when exactly that woman's going to die. And I agree, it says 24 hours. I had a woman who had twins, ruptured membranes, the bag of water's leaked fluid at 19 weeks in one baby. Second baby was still alive. And it was at a Catholic institution. There was a heartbeat. I can't induce. Medically, we would recommend that uterus be emptied or the woman have the option to do that before she gets to the point of sepsis and dying. And we saw in 2012 in Ireland, the Irish or the Indian dentist who begged to have the abortion so that she wouldn't die, and they refused, and she died.
If this bill became law, would it be better for medical professionals such as yourself if the exceptions were the traditional rape, incest, life of the mother? Or is my premise unacceptable, that the 20-week ban would become law?
Right. Dr. Well, King? Obviously I feel the 20-week ban is unconstitutional, unscientific, and unethical. So personally, I want to see the law go away. I don't think it has any place in our medical system to criminalize physicians for trying to save women's lives. It's just completely unacceptable. I'll let Kathy comment.
I don't think anybody, adult, would want the legislature telling them what medical care they can have, what kinds of procedures, or what timing it should be done. I think it's just absolutely wrong. And if they're concerned about, you know, one particular type of procedure that is so rarely done, and in our situations it's only done to save a mother who cannot tolerate labor, then that's a different issue. But just to use those exceptions, no, I don't agree with that.
So it wouldn't be any improvement at all if the traditional rape, incest, life of the mother exceptions were added, right?
Because it needs to be broader.
Because
that.
The premise
broader.
Is still...
Is way broader. Yes. You heard women yesterday who have just... horrible situations where their fetus is going to die. Is it going to be today? Is it going to be during the pregnancy, during the labor? And they're waiting. It's just abusive. It's psychologically just so difficult to know that this baby's going to die.
Well, let's talk about that, because when I interviewed Representative Kramer and Senator Lazic, they talked about women like that would receive, it was a new term to me, and so I want to get it right, perinatal hospice care. Mm-hmm. When I looked it up, it exists at, I think, the Medical College of Wisconsin and other facilities. Let's talk about perinatal hospice care and your response to when the sponsors of the bill say that is something that would help these women.
We have been doing perinatal hospice or perinatal palliative care for years and years and years. This is nothing new to us.
But it's new to people like us, so why don't you give us a quick definition? Excuse me for interrupting you.
That is absolutely fine. So I am privileged to work in conjunction with Dr. Steve Leutner. He's a neonatologist and a bioethicist at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. And he is actually one of the national experts on perinatal hospice. And he could speak much better to this point than I, but... having been involved in this program. This is a program that is just not for the fetus, but for the entire family. Right. And so when you have families who are facing these devastating diagnoses, especially those not compatible with life after birth, basically you're both planning kind of end of life care at the beginning of the baby's life. And what you're trying to come up with is a plan for the entire family in helping them move through this process to not only alleviate pain for the newborn, but to alleviate the pain and suffering of the entire family. And the thing that is so critical to perinatal hospice is that it is an individualized, personalized program, and the family has the ability to make these decisions in conjunction, again, with physician faith. And not that a politician tell them, no, this is your only option. You must carry this baby to term, and then you can deal with perinatal hospice. That is just cruel and unusual.
Representative Kramer and Senator Lazic seem to say that if their bill becomes law, there'd be more perinatal hospice care given. Are the professionals who engage in this ready to accept more patients, more families, as you said, Dr. King, or Dr. Hodke?
It's already available. I don't think it's going to change anything.
Right.
All these services are now available and being used.
Yeah. I truly don't think that Mary Lasich understands what is going on in the world of perinatal hospice in the state of Wisconsin. If she really wanted to know, she could have called Dr. Leutner, the national expert who lives in this state, and asked for him to give input into this. She never contacted him. And Dr. Leutner himself is 100% opposed to this law.
Right. As we debate the cost of health care in America, is perinatal hospice care covered by medical insurers now?
Only as much as your insurance covers counseling and those types of things. These patients end up with huge medical bills no matter what their choices are.
Right. And I see nothing in this law that if they're so concerned about improving perinatal hospice that they're going to make funding widely available to support that care.
Okay. Dr. Hartke, anything you're finding you want to add on that or other?
No, I just have a statement that Dr. Leutner did submit to the committee written. He was unable to be there. We all have day jobs that we have to take care of these patients. But I agree, he is absolutely opposed to this law.
Okay. Is there a racial dimension to this issue? And here's why I ask. The 2013 Department of Health Services report said that 1 in 3 abortions in 2013 were performed on minorities. Is there a racial dimension to this debate, or is that any thoughts on that?
In pertaining to this law, that is completely a moot point.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. I was reading today, 14 other states have enacted 20-week bans on abortions. Have some of those been upheld by the courts? Have they been held in abeyance by the courts? So what's the experience in other states? Do you have any knowledge of that?
My understanding is that in every state where this law has been challenged, it has been found unconstitutional. So just recently in Idaho, an identical law was found by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to be blatantly unconstitutional. And so one can only conjecture that if this law is opposed, that the same thing would happen.
And I agree. I spoke to Dr. Sheldon Wasserman, our vice chair of the
Wisconsin
section.
Former member of the Assembly, yes.
Former member of the Assembly last night, and he concurred exactly that. And we're hoping that if this were to pass, that would happen. I believe it would. I hope that our legislature is wise enough to realize the evidence that was presented by the experts, the scientists, and the physicians and the patients yesterday and make a better choice than that and save taxpayer money rather than having to go through the challenge.
Thoughts on the real goal of the bill? Since Roe versus Wade is a national Supreme Court decision, is the goal of the sponsors here just to outlaw abortions and this is their next attempt to do it? Thoughts on that?
I believe it's just one more step. And we know that there are groups that who probably drafted this because Senator Lasich said that she had a lawyer draft this. And they go around from state to state. We've seen this in other issues. We learned, you know, at the Congressional Leadership Conference for our organization that this is a trend on many, many issues. And so I think, yes, it's just one more little step, and it's going to harm our patients.
Okay. Next steps for physicians and groups you represent trying to fight this bill. If it's up next, as early as next Tuesday in the state Senate, how are you groups going to try to defeat it? Other than appearing on Wisconsin Eye and testifying yesterday?
Well, we really appreciate this opportunity, but I've already been in contact yesterday and this morning with the National Communications Office and our Government Affairs Office at the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists preparing to try and do next steps, and I don't know what all of those are. We already know from multiple articles in the media that Governor Walker can't wait to sign this. It's unfortunate. I think it's really a political issue for, you know, a future run. And I hate to see women sacrificed in that way.
Any additional thoughts, Dr. King?
No, I agree. I think we just want people to understand what this bill is about, because I think there's a lot of misrepresentation about what this bill is about and how cruel this bill is and really affecting the most vulnerable women in Wisconsin, and taking just not letting doctors be doctors and completely interfering in the doctor-patient relationship. And unfortunately, this does seem to be all about political ideology and, I hate to say it, but Governor Walker's political aspirations, that this is just another check that he can make to show that he is 100% pro-life. But unfortunately, he's doing that at the sacrifice of real women and real families suffering in the state of Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Kathy Hartke. Dr. Kathy King, thanks for coming in to talk about this very important issue. And just a programming note, you can watch Wisconsin Eye coverage of the hearing yesterday on this issue. And, of course, next Tuesday, if the Senate debates it, you can watch that on Wisconsin Eye. I want to thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.